Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me is my fearless pilot, co-pilot, partner in crime, anything you want to call him. His name's Bryant Knox. You've seen his stuff on ESPN, Bleacher Report, Comcast Sportsnet, NBC Sports Northwest, Facebook, Twitter, and of course, OregonSportsNews.com. He's just an amazing guy with a lot of talent. He's definitely a great sports writer, sports caster, everything that has to do with sports. He can cover it all. He can look at it all. He can tell you what's going on. He's got it all. He's a one-stop shop in the sports world. So, Brian, thanks for being on the show again tonight. We really love having you on. It's been a record here in 2018. I think we've had you on like 17 times, which is weird because it's only been 8 weeks. But thanks again for coming on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Casey. Thanks so much for the intro. I hope that the background volume here isn't too distracting. I'm broadcasting live from Pizza Schmitza for the second time in 2018, but I actually think it's kind of fitting because the song currently playing in the background is "You Can't Always Get What You Want," and I know that you really wanted Dan Patrick here, not me. We'll run with it, and I think we'll have a good time.
Yeah, you know, Danny's a good guy, but, you know, you and I go way back. You know, it wasn't like we were going to get through kindergarten without each other. So, Patrick, you know, we respect the hell out of you, but, you know, you've got the East Coast on lockdown. We'll take care of the West Coast, and we'll be respectful in that regard. But, you know, Brian, I always prefer to have you over that guy. I mean, you've got just this great haircut that he just can't touch, and that's just, there's nothing he can do about that. You know, you have hair the way LeBron is 6'8" in ways I never will. You know, it's just stuff. You're born with certain greatness, and you just celebrate that and use it the best of your ability, and by God, you do that. So thank you.
And you know what, we didn't even meet him until middle school, so that's not even close.
And you know, he was in junior high before that because he's real old school, so you know, we respect the hell out of him, but, you know, he's got the East Coast thing going. We'll hang out here. We'll be fine. If you think that was a little mad to listen to, well, we've got a little tease for our second segment, which is a lot of madness. And for those of you that are fans of My Favorite Murder podcast, you might really like our podcast tonight because it's all about our favorite madness moments. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to get onto that in the second segment. But for the first segment, I wanted to let Bryant run the gauntlet here. We've got some Blazers moments we want to check in on. First of all, Bryant, the Blazers are playing like they're an NBA Jam, for crying out loud. I mean, boom shakalaka, they're on fire. Is it the shoes? I mean, everything you could say about the Blazers right now, they are on an absolute terror. How hot are they right now? I mean, are you on cloud nine if you're a Blazers fan watching this stretch?
I think you have to be, but you also have to be cautiously optimistic because the truth is Portland has played incredibly well. Damian Lillard is on fire. He's emerging as an MVP. I won't use the word candidate because it's James Harden's award to lose at this point, but he's in the discussion kind of in that second or third tier, which is still saying something in this particular race. So I think there's a lot to be happy about, but I think you also have to recognize, if you're a Blazers fan, that the Western Conference has really helped pave this path for you with the injuries to Jimmy Butler. Paul Millsap is just getting back on the court. Boogie Cousins is gone for the year. You know, there's Blake Griffin missed a ton of time before he was traded. So there are a lot of factors at play here that make you realize, okay, Portland is where they are because they're playing well. But they probably wouldn't be this high in the standings, the number three seed, if it weren't for the factors around them. That said, there's one other fact I can't ignore, and it's Damian Lillard's hair. Let me break this down.
Please do.
I was on Twitter today, and I saw, courtesy of NBA Math, the official NBA Math Twitter page, that when Damian Lillard changed his hairdo, he bumped up his points per game from 25.2 to 32.7. His field goal percentage went from 44.1 to 46.9. Three-point percentage skyrocketed from 36.9 to 40.5. True shooting percentage even jumped up from 59.1 to 63. And his plus-minus went from a plus 2.8 to a plus 5.7. I'm not saying it's the hair in the same way that Spike Lee always said it's got to be the shoes, but as MDMF phrased it, he's been just a hair better. So it's there's a lot to be happy about, obviously, just because there have been so many external factors as well.
One, you know, you've raised a lot of great points about what they've been through in the last several months and what they may or may not have had to face because of injuries to their opponents. Currently, they're in third place. Now, they're well out of first or second. They're, I believe, 11 games behind either of those two teams, which are the Rockets and the Warriors. But they've got a shot at making the playoffs. Now, how crazy is that, that I say they're in third place and they've got a shot at making the playoffs? Well, the seeds 3 through 8 are in a four-game logjam. There's only four games that separate those six teams. So how crazy would it be for you if the Blazers go this hot in February, and we assume they're going to go just as hot in March, and then somehow miss out on the playoffs with as good as we've seen them playing?
I really think the only way that's possible is if Damian Lillard actually goes down with an injury. You know, knock on wood, count your lucky stars, cross your fingers, whatever is most important to you, that doesn't happen. But I think it would be absolutely catastrophic if they missed the playoffs, and I think it would take some sort of catastrophe like Lillard going down with a major injury to have that happen, because, you know, there, like I said, the West has done a good job of paving the path for Portland on behalf of Portland, and yeah, nobody's going to touch the 1 or 2 seed, and it's a crazy, crazy race for 3 through 8 with, you know, 8 teams fighting for those spots, but I don't see a scenario where Portland stays healthy and misses the postseason.
Yeah, and I think that would be a huge disaster. I mean, it's like last year when Nurkic went down with a leg injury, and they made it into the playoffs, but they were kind of limping in, and then once they got there, they couldn't do much with the team they had left, and it just showed how much lacking they were in the depth department. I think they've got more depth this year, and I think Zach Collins is maybe a little bit better than people thought he was. I think Caleb Swanigan, unfortunately, is maybe a little bit worse than people were hoping for. You got Evan Turner, who's been kind of flat, just like he was last year. You have Mo Harkless, who's just kind of flat. You have Myers Leonard, who doesn't do much. You have Ed Davis, who's actually being really good this year. I'm kind of hoping Portland finds a way to bring him back next year. But you really can't look to anybody outside of Dame and CJ that's really the third wheel here, that's the third part of the big three. As much as we like to say that's Yusuf Nurkic, he's not the every-game contributor we're hoping for. Is this a team that you think can go deep in the playoffs if they make it, or is the regular season run they're on right now, is that kind of the peak for them? And then when they get in the playoffs, everybody else seems to go in that same gear they're in now, and now they're back to square one trying to compete with teams that have maybe a little bit more depth and maybe even a little bit more talent?
I like them as a very dangerous first-round opponent. I think that Portland obviously has aspirations of getting beyond the second round. I don't know how realistic getting to the Western Conference Finals is this year with Houston and Golden State just on an absolute tear en route to an inevitable matchup, or a matchup that seems inevitable. But I do like them as a very, very dangerous first-round matchup against really any of the teams beneath them. San Antonio, if Kawhi Leonard's not back, I don't trust them. Even if he is back, they have too many flaws that he can't alone fix. Minnesota is going to get Jimmy Butler back for the postseason most likely, but how rusty is he going to be? OKC is one of the worst defensive teams in the league without Andre Robertson. So, and you know, Denver doesn't look like a tough opponent. If the Clippers sneak in, I don't trust them one bit. Utah can be dangerous just because of how well they play defensively. But I still would like Portland over them in that matchup as well. I'm probably missing a team or two. But basically my point is I really, really like Portland as a dangerous first-round opponent. I just can't picture them getting past the Warriors or the Rockets in the second round this year.
Yeah, I think the Western Conference isn't as scary as everyone thought it was going to be in the preseason. There's definitely some room for Portland to make a couple moves forward if they want to, but the teams at the top, where the cream of the crop are, I think that's what scares you a little bit, is that Portland just isn't on the level of the top two or three teams in the Western Conference, no matter how you slice it up. Now, something that I have been considering recently is, You know, LeBron James is on a tear in the Eastern Conference yet again, and he seems to do the same thing Lillard does every year and goes on a tear after the All-Star game. It's like they're saving their energy for the second half of the season. But do you think that Lillard, if he were, let's say the whole Blazers team was able to switch over to the East Coast, would they be in the Eastern Conference Finals every year? I mean, how good would they? We always talk about the West is where all the best teams are. Would Portland be a conference contender in the Eastern Conference if they could somehow swap conferences next year?
They'd definitely be a contender. I'm not going to go on a limb and say that they'd be in the conference finals every single year because Boston is very deep. And with Kyrie leading the charge there, you know, you don't know how good they're going to be when they get Gordon Hayward back, which, you know, some conspiracy theorists are throwing out the idea that he could end up playing in this year's postseason. I'm not sure I buy that. But also, we can't ignore a team like Toronto that has almost been the best team in the NBA. Obviously, they're playing lesser competition in the East than the Warriors or Rockets are. But from a day-to-day basis, they've been one of the top three teams in the league for a very long time now. So I won't go as far as to say they'd be in the championship or in the conference championship every single year, but they'd absolutely be competing for it. You know, it seems like this year they're competing for a second round bid and that's about it. If they were in the East, they'd be competing for a bid against LeBron James or that Toronto team. It'd be a completely different story.
Yeah, and I think that would be something similar to like the 90s when, you know, Drexler and the Blazers had so much trouble getting out of the Western Conference. And then even when they did, they had to play the Pistons and the Bulls. And I think that it's similar to this year with Lillard and McCollum, how much talent this team has. But even if they could somehow get out of the first or second round, they've got so much talent above them. And even if they were in the East, there's Cleveland, there's Boston, there's Milwaukee, there's Toronto. I mean, there's so many teams that could kick them out that you like to think they would go over there and just be a huge juggernaut over there, but maybe before all the trades happened this past offseason, but now that everybody's a little more spread out, you know, yeah, Indiana's weaker now, but Toronto's better. Boston's definitely better. Cleveland's probably arguably better. So I would love to see Portland somehow pull it off where they can just switch to the other conference, but I think it's one of those things where Olshay's going to have to go into this offseason. He's got to pluck a top 25 talent out of somewhere to pair with Damian and CJ, because right now, as much as I love Yusuf Nurkic, I just don't think he's the answer at, you know, if he's going to be the third part of their big three. I feel like they need somebody else on offense then, because currently, as much of a tear as they're on, it's because Damian Lillard does not slow down. If he slows down at all, I feel like they can lose every game.
Yeah, I really think the only way they find a top 25 talent to pair with that duo is, yeah, I mean, either A, they end up with an absolute steal in the draft, which, you know, this year's class is deep, but without trading up, I'm not sure you're going to get a superstar talent. The other way is to trade for someone because you don't have the cap space to bring on anybody.
Right.
You know, we talk about lopsided trades where you can find a team that has lots and lots of salary cap and a disgruntled star. So you give them some money to match contracts and you take someone back. You know, the cap climate isn't really going to support that this year. But because everyone's so infatuated with this draft class, Olshay could legitimately look to trade a first round pick, even if it's not a lottery pick, and try to incentivize a team to take it or to take a bad contract with that pick. So he could try to say, hey, you know, Indiana Pacers, you really want our draft pick? Well, you're going to have to take Evan Turner's contract or Myers Leonard's contract just to make it happen. Right. So I think that there are a couple routes, but they're just not very likely at this point, which means Olshay is going to be saying his nightly prayers that the team somehow finds an organic third option. Because, like I said, there are two options out there. They're just not all that likely at this point.
Yeah, and I think if you push comes to shove, this year they've got to make some big splashes. Even if it's a step backward to make a couple of steps forward next year, I think that's probably what they need at this point. They can't just keep adding people. They've got to add some real talent, even though if it might cost something, whether that's a pick or they go over the luxury tax again or you have to give up a player that you really love. It's like, well, at some point, you've got to get rid of some guys because we know that this roster isn't working as constructed. So it's not like you can just keep adding people. Eventually, you have to get rid of some guys. So
yeah, I hate to throw this out there casually because this is very much worth its own podcast, its own hour-long podcast. But, you know, Olshay has to legitimately think about, does someone like CJ McCollum have enough trade value that you can bring in a better secondary piece? Again, I hate to throw that out there and quickly move on, which is what we're going to do here.
Right.
But if you ever want to devote an entire podcast to that topic, we can definitely go into that because that's something Olshay would be irresponsible to ignore this summer. I'm not saying he has to pull the trigger. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying he would be irresponsible to say, hey, I drafted this kid. There's absolutely no way I'm trading him.
Yeah, I'm honestly getting tired of hearing that he won't even take calls for Damian or CJ. It's like, I don't want you to trade him if you don't have to, but at least listen to offers. We shouldn't be hearing that completely you're not going to listen.
Yeah, so. that's stubborn at that point because he drafted the kid. He wants to see that duo do something big. You know, he could very well be looking for his next NBA job in the next few years, whether it be by choice or not. And he wants the fact that he drafted this backcourt tandem that became an all-star, a superstar, and then a near all-star. He wants them to do some real damage for his own resume, quite frankly. And so I think he's really kind of doubling down. And you're right, it is frustrating to hear that he won't take calls. But again, I could talk about that subject for an entire hour-long podcast, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll schedule that for another time. I think we're both mutually interested in discussing that on a whole episode in the near future, so we'll definitely schedule that. So moving on to segment number two, we have our March Madness brackets, not early, so don't get jealous if you think we somehow know who the teams are going to be, because we don't. The conference tournaments are not over yet, so we're waiting for that to happen. But what we do have is I asked Bryant earlier this week to construct a top 10 of his favorite moments in March Madness history, and I did the same for myself. And the catch that we decided on is that you couldn't have a moment that was prior to your birth. So it's something you had to at least have the option to experience live. So only the stuff on the table will be something that one of us has seen live or at least had the opportunity to, even if we were only a baby. We're at least alive and breathing and could have watched it. We may not even know we saw it. Who knows? So what we're going to do is if you had the experience, you know, pleasure, hopefully, of listening to our episode a couple weeks ago where we talked about the best sports movie ever, we're going to do something very similar to that where we're going to assign points to our favorite moments, and then we're going to assign counterpoints to the other person's moments so that we can basically try to eliminate ones that we think are a little bit weaker to try to weed out the weak ones and then get a kind of a final four of the best moments ever and then eventually a champion. And we don't know that this will necessarily definitively decide who's has the best moment ever, but, you know, some systems work. We don't know if this one does, but it's madness, so it doesn't have to be scientific. It's not supposed to be. So, Bryant, I'll let you go first and list off your top 10 moments in your lifetime, and then I'll do mine, and then we'll seed our own and then each other's if that works for you.
Yep, that works for me.
All right, then the floor is yours.
Okay, so my number one, which I'm awarding the most points possible, is actually a fairly recent one. I absolutely fell in love with the Florida Gulf Coast Dunk City team. I think that they epitomized everything that is good and fun about March Madness, which is that they were entertaining, they were competitive, and yes, they were a Cinderella story. They brought their high-flying approach to the game to the main stage. They brought their bench celebrations to the main stage. You know, within one half of one game, people realized that they were no ordinary Cinderella because, yes, they were a small school and they found a way to win, but so much beyond that, they just provided so much sheer entertainment. So they get my number one spot, actually. I know it's a true Cinderella story, even in this particular bracket that we're doing right here, but I got to go with them.
All right.
Number two, which is going to have the second most points, is Chris Jenkins, game winner from last year. So the reason that this is so high up on mine is because this is the only March Madness moment that I've ever encountered via radio. I was in my car and I was driving to, gosh, I think it was just the grocery store. But I wasn't so into the game itself until the second half. But then I had to run and make an emergency stop. And I started TiVoing the game. But unfortunately, I turned on sports radio just as I do by habit. Was on the final moments, so I thought, okay, I'll listen to it. I actually listened to the game-winning shot on the radio, and it was just such a pure moment of you know, old school and the current game coming together. I absolutely loved it. So Chris Jenkins gets the next spot. The next one for me that has the most importance in my life is Adam Morrison crying on the court after losing to UCLA. And I love this moment for a couple reasons. Now, first of all, let me say something super outright here. I do not think that this is like if there's no crying in baseball. I am just fine with somebody crying in basketball. I actually have no problem with that. Why I love this moment, though, is because Adam Morrison started crying on the court before the game was even over.
Yep.
Gonzaga had given up, I believe it was a 17-point lead to UCLA, so there was a ton of frustration there. And UCLA finally took over with the lead with like 2.7 seconds left or something like that. If you're Adam Morrison, first of all, you need to be composed as the star because you now have 3 seconds, 2 seconds to put something together and actually still win this game. But the other reason I love it is because not only did he start crying, which again, I have no problem with, but then he went from a seated position to the fetal position to a completely sprawled out position
on
national television.
And this isn't the final game. This isn't the Elite Eight or the Final Four. I believe it was the Sweet 16 play-in game.
Yeah, and so that was one of those moments where, you know, everybody can picture Adam Morrison crying on the court, but the context of it really makes it for me. So that's why it ends up in my third position.
Okay.
Next, as a Trailblazers fan, I loved watching CJ and the Lehigh 15 seed take down Duke. If you've never read CJ's Players Tribune account of how that all went down, it's really, really great. It involves a female student classmate of his asking him to get Austin Rivers' phone number for her. And then when he actually beats Austin Rivers and throws that in her face, it's really great. My next one, number six for me, is Gordon Hayward almost taking down Duke also. What can I say? I love watching Duke lose so much that I also love watching them almost lose.
Right.
Coach K made the terrible mistake to miss on purpose and give Butler a chance to win that game. And he admitted afterward that he wasn't thinking of the worst case scenario. He was just trying to run time off the clock. Sure. And Gordon Hayward put up that half court shot, almost nearly won the game. I love the fact that it almost came back to bite Coach K. My next one is Chris Webber calling the timeout. That was just one of the worst moments in NCAA history. And I love it for that reason. After that, I have Oregon's Final Four run last year. It kills me the fact that they couldn't just get one freaking rebound. But it was such a good game against North Carolina, and it was the first time they'd been to the Final Four since something like 2000 BC. I can't remember exactly.
But 1938, it was like whatever that. It was.
Yeah, whatever it was.
They weren't even the Ducks back then. Didn't count.
No, they were the Tolfers. Tolfers.
That's right.
Next, in my third to final position, I have Rip Hamilton destroying UW on a last second shot, mostly just because as an Oregon guy myself, it's always great to see UW Nation just collectively cry. I love it.
Sure.
Plus, having Rip Hamilton, you know, kind of before he was the Detroit Pistons star is kind of fun, too. My second to last spot, I have George Mason's Final Four run because that was a ton of fun that nobody saw coming. Then after that, I have Mario Chalmers hitting the three after Derrick Rose botched the free throw again for Memphis against Kansas. I think that that was just a really fun way to head to overtime. And so it makes my top 10, but out of all those, it has to be the final seed.
It's a very, very strong list. A lot of recent stuff in there, but some old school stuff too. So I appreciate the mix. That's really good.
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah. So mine is kind of a mixture of very recent or very old. There's not a whole lot in between, so bear with me. For the first one, we're going way back to 1982 to Michael Jordan hitting the jumper as a sophomore to win the national championship against Georgetown and Patrick Ewing. That one, you know, as far as March Madness lore, doesn't really get much bigger than that. You know, he wasn't really a big name at the time and turned into a superstar after that and then became one of the best players of all time. So just kind of neat to watch that and see him do that and get launched into the NBA stratosphere and then become a Bulls rookie in 85. And just take off from there. And you know, it all started back there, you know, very humble beginnings. You know, he got cut at NC State, ended up going to North Carolina after that. And it was just incredible to see his trajectory start out in very humble beginnings and then turn into the megastar he became. And, you know, now he's a household name internationally. It's just crazy how quickly all that happened. You know, it happened over the course of 30 years, but it seems quick when you're watching highlights. After that, so that's my number one. My number two is going to be, this one's tough because I would love to put my third one in front of this, but my number two is going to have to be Christian Laettner in 1992. His catch and shoot to beat Kentucky to get to the Final Four, even though he should have been ejected earlier in that game for stepping on an opponent. It's still just one of the best moments in college basketball. You know, everybody loves to hate Christian Laettner. He embraces the villain role. I embrace hating him. If you haven't watched the documentary on his career, it's really interesting to see some of his teammates actually say, you know, they really didn't like him that much, but he was on their team, so it didn't really matter. But that's going to be my second slot. Coming right after that is a couple years prior to that, in 1990, the UNLV Runnin' Rebels absolutely destroyed Duke in the national championship by 30 points, probably could have been more. They really let off the gas late. And that was just really fun to watch Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning and some of these other guys that just, you know, beat the ever-loving stuffing out of Duke and Coach K and Christian Laettner and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley and all these guys that were so great. And then they just got decimated in the national championship. They got revenge the next year, but at least we got to watch this one. So that's my number three. After that, going back to 84, as he was known then, Hakeem Olajuwon at the University of Houston taking on Patrick Ewing in the national championship game. You know, it doesn't get much better than that. You know, the true battle of the Giants, and it came down to the wire, and it was just amazing to see that game. It was really sad that Ewing won because, you know, it was great to see him win a national championship because he ended up losing the next year to Villanova. But it was crazy to see Hakeem Olajuwon get there back-to-back years. He was there the year before when Clyde Drexler was still there, and they lost to NC State. So it's just really nuts to see Hakeem Olajuwon have so many chances to win a national championship and couldn't do it. But, you know, it's not really that bad to lose to Patrick Ewing. And then he ended up getting revenge in 1995, I think, is the year that they played them in the NBA championship. It was Houston versus New York's, and the dream was realized for the dream. So that is my number four. So number five, I'm going to go back to 2015. Frank Kaminsky and the Wisconsin Badgers beating previously unbeaten Kentucky in the Final Four. I thought that was just incredible. Nobody thought it could happen. It was something where they just kept talking about, you know, eventually you got to hit shots over seven-footers, and then these guys from Wisconsin came in and beat them at their own game, and I thought that was just incredible. Everybody was looking like it was going to be Duke versus Kentucky in the final. We ended up getting Wisconsin versus Duke, which is a really good game. So that's from the way back machine to all the way back to 2015. So that'll be my number five. And then after that, I go to the really fun 2004 year when the UConn men and the UConn women both won the national title in the same year. It was the first time in Division I history that had happened, and only the second time in college basketball history. So that was a really neat movement. So I'm going to give that my number five. Number four, I'm going to give to Chris Webber's Phantom Timeout. I know you already mentioned that, but that's just such a huge moment in the history of college basketball. You know, they were playing North Carolina, a team that didn't have any megastars on it, and you have the Fab Five that this is supposed to be their culmination, and Chris Webber's going to go pro the next year, and Jalen Rose is going to go pro, and Ricky Jackson's going to go pro, and Juwan Howard's going to go pro. And it's just nuts that, you know, they couldn't win a national championship with how much talent they had just in their starting five alone. I mean, they had a really good bench also. What people forget is that the Michigan team won the national championship 2 years before those guys got there and had many of the starters from that team on the bench. So you have a national championship caliber bench and you still can't win. It's just nuts that they had that big of a meltdown in back-to-back years. One of them was to Duke. And the second one was to UNLV or UNC, so it's just kind of nuts that it came down to that. And then for my number three, I'm going to give a shout-out to my man Matt Howard, who had everybody inspired, even the unathletic white dudes like me, to think they might have game because he went on a tear in the tournament, and he was sinking tip-ins and free throws and jumpers to win close games in that tournament, end up getting all the way to the final. And then you mentioned your Gordon Hayward moment. You know, as good as Gordon was that year, I don't think they get there without Howard. I mean, that guy, I think he was only 6'8 or 6'9, but he played like he was 8 feet tall in that tournament. It was crazy how good they were with him helping out in the paint, doing all the dirty work. After that, I've got the 2006 and 2007 University of Florida teams winning back-to-back titles with the same five starters, which is crazy because I don't think any of those guys are starters or staying healthy in the league anymore. I mean, you had Al Horford and Joakim Noah and or Joakim Noah, however you pronounce it, and you had Corey Brewer and a couple other guys that are really good NBA talents. And, you know, you look back now and, you know, nobody really hears from those guys anymore. And it's been 12 years, so kind of crazy how quick they fell apart in the professional side of things. But when they were in college, they were literally unbeatable. Both years they went, they won both of them. I mean, the second year they beat Greg Oden, which, you know, may not have been as hard in the NBA as we like to think it was. But in college, that guy was crazy, even as a freshman. And last but not least, my last spot goes to 2007 North Carolina Georgetown going to overtime in the Sweet 16. Finally getting relevant again after many years of the rivalry being dead. You had John Thompson III leading his father's old team back to the Final Four, becoming the first son to succeed his father and make it to the Final Four. You had the legacies of Roy Hibbert versus Tyler Hansborough and this amazing, uber-talented Georgetown team and this amazing North Carolina team. Both of them were supposed to be national championship contenders. It didn't happen because, of course, Florida won that year, but and Ohio State actually got in the way of Georgetown after they got past North Carolina. But it was just an amazing moment to see those two storied franchises finally going back to deep seeds in the tournament and going head-to-head and actually going into overtime. It was a really neat game, and I'll always remember that one. So I start with UNC and Georgetown, and I finish with UNC and Georgetown, and they're only 15 years apart. So that's my top 10. So now, Bryant, we begin the dirty work of counter-seeding each other's seeds. So I'll let you go first and go through mine.
Cool. I know that this doesn't bode well for me coming out on top of all of this, but I also have to give Jordan Ewing the top notch on your list. I think you and I are both on the exact same page there. There's little reason to debate that. The Jordan shot may not be as famous as some of his shots throughout the years, but it's right up there, considering, which is incredible considering the professional career that he had.
Right.
So definitely give that the top notch. And then because I also had it on mine, I'm giving the Chris Webber Phantom Timeout the second spot. So a solid 9-pointer there. For my next one, I personally love the UConn men and women's story. So that gets
and
the
it
third
is
best.
National Women's Day, so shout out to all the women out there. We love all of you. We love you know, equal rights. We want everybody to have the same things, and we want, you know, gender equality. And, you know, this is a big part of that, that there should be, you know, sports is one of the most basic things we all do as kids, and that should be equal to begin with. So that's just a huge moment in the history of sports. We're definitely glad to celebrate it.
Completely agree. And so for that reason, it gets the third best spot on your list from my perspective. After that, I gotta go Akeem versus Ewing. What a battle. Looks like you and I actually have that in the exact same spot as well. After that, I'm going Christian Laettner because I recognize the importance of it. It was never one of my favorite moments. I didn't watch it live, and I didn't quite have the appreciation for it after the fact. But I do recognize its history and what it means for the game and for this particular month and this tournament. So I'll give it, you know, credit where it's due there. After that, I love the Matt Howard story.
Right.
I really do. I think that, you know, speaking of unathletic dudes, you know, he has to follow Christian Laettner. So he gets the next spot from me. After that, I honestly had to look back on this because I didn't actually remember that unbeaten Kentucky team. But as I read up on it, I remembered it more and more and how great that team really was and how Frank Kaminsky coming out, you know, he was dancing on Sports Nation on ESPN. Like, I do love that storyline in hindsight. I have to admit that I didn't quite remember it off the top of my head. Had a little amnesia there, but once I got to relearn the story, I really, really liked it. Just not quite enough to be in the top half of your list.
Well, they had, you know, I'm forgetting his name, Sam Decker, who was just hitting threes whenever they needed it. They had another guy that was their point guard that could hit threes. They had Niall Davis or something like that. Niles Jones or something like that, but they, you know, one of the best wings in the country, and I was actually hoping he would get drafted by Portland last year, and I was kind of disappointed he didn't. None of those guys have amounted to much in the NBA, but that one year, they seemed to have it all figured out, and it looked like they were going to win the title, and then Duke and Jahlil Okafor got in their way, but it was still just, it made for one heck of a final.
Jahlil Okafor, speaking of players who aren't doing much in the NBA at this point, my next spot goes to the Florida back-to-back titles. You know, I think you may be slightly harsh on Al Horford because he is an integral part of the Boston Celtics right now. No, he's not a superstar or flashy player, but I think that he's still pretty productive. But, I mean, Joakim Noah is the owner of hands down the NBA's worst contract at this point.
Right.
Corey Brewer and some of those guys, you know, at this point aren't doing anything. So I do think that collegiate team is going to have a legacy for a very long time. And I think that a lot of the players on that team will kind of, their glory days will be that instead of their pro days.
Sure.
After that, in the penultimate spot, I have 2007 UNC Georgetown. And then after that, for me, just because I know there's some youth bias here, I don't actually even remember this moment. So
Watch the highlights. It's crazy.
I have watched the highlights, so I do have an appreciation for it now. But because I don't have a nostalgia factor for it for me,
right?
Your third highest is my lowest. So
you have to think of the stakes that you have. Duke, who's, you know, blue chip, blue blood, whatever you want to call it. They're a power team, and then you have UNLV, who came out of absolutely nowhere, had no business being in the tournament, and they go on just an absolute terror, and not only beat Duke but just destroy them in the national championship, and they just made it look funny. I mean, it was crazy how badly they beat him by. I mean, it should have been 50 points. It was crazy. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily jump off the screen when you're watching highlights. It's just the magnitude of that moment, seeing what should have been a college juggernaut just getting absolutely decimated. It was just incredible to watch. And, you know, you've heard about all the things since then where, you know, they may have had some issues and maybe some things they were doing that they shouldn't have been doing, but it was the 90s. I'm not sure that everybody wasn't doing that. So I have a hard time faulting UNLV for that. But, you know, I have a hard time believing that Duke didn't do some of that stuff with all the stuff that's come out in recent years. But, whatever they did or didn't do, they can't take that game away from them. And those starting five for the Rebels just absolutely ran all over Duke, pun intended.
Sure.
So now we've got, okay, so we've got your counters to mine. So let's get those results up here. So we've got 13 and 15 and 8. 9. We got a 20. I don't know if anybody's going to beat a 20, so we might already have a winner. But let's see. So we've got, okay, so we've got a 13, a 15, a 13, a 14, and a 20. So
pretty strong.
Let's see. So Adam Morrison crying, I'll start there. That moment for me, I guess just because I grew up seeing highlights of Larry Bird crying when losing to Magic Johnson after it was, you know, well in doubt, the game was already decided. I guess I kind of have a reverse reaction to Adam Morrison crying. I was kind of like, come on, man, you know, at least play if you're going to cry. You know, don't give up all the games going on. And, you know, it's still a huge moment because, you know, that was supposed to be Gonzaga's year and they ended up getting upended by UCLA, but it was still just one that I guess I maybe middle of the road on it. So I'm going to give it a 5. And then Gulf Coast bringing Dunk City. I think that is an amazing moment. I think had they gone farther, I would have it higher. But, and you know, the Sweet 16 for a team that nobody had ever heard of before is still amazing. But I just feel like there's some bigger moments here. So I'm going to go ahead and give that a 1. CJ McCollum and Lehigh taking down Duke is a 15. And if I'm not misremembering this, I think that was actually they were defending their national championship that year. So that made it even bigger that they came out as a national championship defending champion and lost the next year to a 15 seed. And that's huge for CJ McCollum to have that. So I'm actually going to give that my 9. George Mason's Final Four run as an 11. That was a lot of fun. I remember seeing those uniforms and going, I don't know what year it is now because they're green, they're yellow. They look like, you know, something like the University of Miami in the early 80s. It was crazy. And they just kept going, and I honestly thought they might win it all. So that one was huge for me. So I'm going to give that an 8. Rip Hamilton, that one I'll actually have to look up. I don't honestly remember that one. So I know that that has a lot of history to it. I'm familiar with the moment, but I haven't actually seen highlights of it myself. So I have to go back and watch those. So I'll give that my 2. Mario Chalmers 3 to win the title for Kansas. I remember that game. And, you know, I really thought that Derrick Rose and Chris Oral Roberts were going to take care of business. And it just blew up in Calipari's face, and I loved it. But I also, you know, I don't necessarily love Mario Chalmers, but I loved him in that moment. And I'm going to give him a 6. And then Chris Jenkins, game winner last year. I'll have to admit, I was pulling for North Carolina unless they played the Ducks. So it was really hard to watch that Final Four game. But I loved watching North Carolina beat Kentucky in the Elite Eight, and I loved watching them beat Gonzaga in the final, even though there were so many fouls, I wasn't sure if Kennedy Meeks was going to be on the floor for the final seconds, which I thought was going to be bad, but Chris Jenkins ended up winning it, so that was great. So I'm actually going to give that my 7. And then Gordon Hayward almost making Coach K look foolish. I think that is such an incredible moment. And if that had gone in, it would have been even bigger. But since it didn't go in, I'm actually going to give it my 4. Oregon's Final Four run last year was amazing. I really appreciated how good they were and how far they went, and that this might have been the culmination because obviously they're not as good this year, and they had never been to the Final Four before. You know, not really, not in the modern era. So I think that has a huge significance, but now that they've taken a huge step backwards yet again, I kind of wonder if last year was more of a fluke than this amazing moment. And then Chris Webber's illegal timeout is just, you know, for me, that just kind of gets that gets the number 1 spot or the number 10 in points because that's just you basically lost the national championship with that play. He inbounded the ball, ran into the corner, and then called timeout that he didn't have. And it was kind of crazy how quick that melted down. And that kind of summed up his career kind of nicely, that, you know, this outstanding player with all this talent and just can't win on the biggest stage. And that was a story as a college player. That's become his story as an NBA player. He never won a championship. And then even as a commentator, he just kind of slinks into the background. You know, he doesn't really have all the best commentary or analysis that we expect from someone like a Charles Barkley, as crazy as that sounds. But, you know, he's kind of like the Randy Moss of the NCAA and the NBA. He just never quite got there. So that's how I score yours, which I think puts Michael Jordan in the 82 final as our official winner, because I don't think there's any 20s on the board other than that one.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too. I think you're right. I think Jordan over Ewing is the only consensus number one pick. After that, we ended up with a couple of 16 pointers and a couple of 15 pointers. So if you wanted to kind of go over those to round out the final four, if you will, I think, or maybe even the final five, just because of the way the numbers worked out.
Right. So we've got CJ McCollum taking down Duke as a 16, and we've got Chris Jenkins, game winner from last year, as another 16. We've got Christian Laettner's shot to beat Kentucky as a 15, and let's see, and then yeah, and then we've got Jordan beating Ewing in the final as our number one, and I guess you could throw a 14 in there. We've got 14, which is 84, Akeem Olajuwon versus Patrick Ewing in the final, so that's our top five, if you will. Or actually Chris Webber's timeout, so that was actually our top five, and then Jordan obviously taking the top notch there, which I guess that's kind of fitting, because he won a title as an amateur, then he ended up winning a gold medal as an amateur, and then he won six titles as a professional, so him coming out as the top March Madness moment, maybe that kind of suits what we're going for here.
I think it's a good little list we got there.
Yeah.
I think the process worked. The Philadelphia 76ers would be proud.
They would. You know, Sam Hinkle or Hinky, whatever his name was, we're trusting the process, and it worked in our favor. It didn't work in Philadelphia, but, well, I mean, it may. We don't know, but it's not looking promising right now from the outset we have today, but eventually, who knows, they could win something.
Hey, if their billboards work, they'll have LeBron next year, and they'll be just fine.
That's right, and, you know, he almost got on the wrong team bus, so that's already working. So with that, we'll have to sign off for the evening because, as always, we're running a little long because we know you guys like to listen to sports talk and we love to talk sports. So we kind of just see that as a good bundle for everybody. So we appreciate you checking us out and listening. And please make sure to check us out on Twitter. I'm at Oregon Sports Guy. He's at Bryant Knox. Make sure you check out OregonSportsNews.com. Lots of local sports commentary, health advice, health stuff that you can get your lifestyle more active. Also some, you know, any local sports. They cover the Ducks, the Beavers, the Blazers, the Seahawks, the Mariners, the Winterhawks. I mean, every team that you're loyal to, they're loyal to as well. So make sure you check them out. Bryant, obviously a pleasure having you on. Thanks again for coming out. And we appreciate you getting the Pizza Smita sponsorship back, because obviously we needed that. Twice in 2018. That's crazy. I can't wait to see what 2019 has for us. But thanks again for coming on. And we'll definitely have to have you back on to talk that CJ trade bait podcast here pretty soon.
Yeah, let's do it, Casey. And if you happen to make yourself out to, or if you happen to make it out to Pizza Smita, get the spicy barbecue. I'm telling you, it's a winner.
It must be, because this is the second time you've said that on the air. So, and I know that you don't say things on the air that are untrue, so I appreciate that. So yeah, definitely get out there, and you know, I'll be out there eventually. But definitely, if you can get out there, make sure you check out Bryant's favorite slice. So, thanks again, Bryant, and this has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox. Thank you for listening. Stay classy and stay tuned.